Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the August 21, 2017 meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District. It's 9 a.m. This morning we have the bulk of our session will be an executive session, so I will delay until 1 p.m. all of the normal admonitions of the staff since we or people in the audience, since we have very few here, and there won't be any discussion after our Pledge of Allegiance and approval of the agenda. So with that, if you would all rise and join Maura Gillen in a safety minute and Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I did fail to give more of the instruction that we asked that you state your name and where you work in the utility for the record, because we are recording this.
You bet. My name is Maura Gillen, and I work in Generation Asset Management as the Generation Asset Management Analyst. School is starting up here in town next Wednesday, August 30th, so I have some back-to-school safety tips. We're going to start sharing the road with buses. So if you're driving behind a bus, allow a greater following distance than if you were driving behind a car. Never pass a bus from behind or from any direction. Be extra alert for children who may be a little late and running towards the bus. Start sharing the road with bicyclists. Be extra vigilant in school zones and residential neighborhoods. Watch for bikes coming from your driveway or from behind parked cars. When getting out of your vehicle, make sure that you check your side mirrors before opening your door. Watch for bicycles before turning right, and make sure that you signal, and same goes for turning left. And don't be afraid to approach bicycles at red lights. They won't trigger the automatic change of the light, so they would appreciate your help. And then just everywhere, there'll be more children walking around in neighborhoods and around schools. So be aware and watch for pedestrians trying to cross the streets. August is also National Immunization Awareness Month. So it's important that children are properly immunized before going back to school. And it's time to start thinking about your flu shot. That's all that I had. So thank you. And if there's any questions, I will attempt to take them.
No, just good words. Appreciate it very much.
Very good words. And a little aha moment for me in the middle of your presentation that I was not aware of was bicycles not triggering lights. That's a real good piece of information.
Yeah.
Incredibly
not,
valuable.
Not a large enough electromagnetic net
yeah.
field.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioners, it's been requested before we go into executive session that we look at the agenda that's been presented to us, and management has recommended a number of our resolutions get moved to consent, and so for managers to know ahead of time what will or will not be on the consent agenda, I'd like to take a look at that. Recommendation has been brought forward to put 9, 11, and 13 and 14 with the possibility of number 12 being placed on the consent agenda. What are your desires?
I'd like to, I just have a question about 13, so could we keep 13 on the regular agenda?
Okay. Any other requests?
So, Commissioner, my apologies, but you said 9, 11?
9, 11, 11, 13, 14, with the possibility of 12.
Right.
I believe that was the recommendation. That's correct. Yeah.
Since 12 is a real estate purchase, let's just leave it on the agenda.
Okay. Okay.
Then it has the support of the, it would have support of the board regardless, but I think a vote would be.
So at this point, I've heard to leave 12 and 13 on, which would move 9, 11, and 14 to the consent.
Yeah.
Any objection to that?
Nope.
All right, let's consider those moved, 9, 11, and 9, 11, and 14, move the consent.
And can I just check on item 12?
You know, right here.
Commissioner Bowles wanted to have it 12.
Yeah, on item 12, at least at this point, I wouldn't plan to make a presentation because it would just be the same presentation as the last board meeting. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just think a vote on a real estate transaction translates better for the public.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So if there's no objection, we'll move those three to the consent agenda. And if there's any other changes that you see that need to be made to the agenda before we approve it as presented? Hearing none, we have our agenda approved. At this time, we will move into executive session to end at noon, and we'll come out of executive session and not go back into regular session until 1 o'clock after lunch.
And for the purpose of?
Oh, purpose, yes. To review the performance of a public employee as authorized by the RCW. It is 12:07 p.m. We've been in executive session since a little after 9 this morning. We're coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. We will now recess until 1 o'clock when we will have our regular business session. Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to the afternoon business session of the August 21 Chelan Public Utility District meeting. We met this morning primarily in executive session. I can report that no votes were taken, no decisions were made. Also, we already did our flag salute and safety minute this morning. And just a reminder to everybody that's in the audience, if you want to address any item on the agenda, please come to the table and use the microphone and state your name and address for the record, and I'd like to remind everybody to please silence your cell phones. Now, before we go to our first item, taking the president's prerogative, I wanted to make a couple of brief comments that normally don't happen, but this morning when I came to the utility prior to the eclipse, I was reminded of something from my younger years, and that is my kids used to really love Sesame Street. And one of the characters on Sesame Street was the Cookie Monster. And after our kids quit watching Sesame Street, we lost track of the Cookie Monster until the kids showed me that cookies had reappeared on computers once they came around. And I had no idea what those were, but I'm happy to report that I think I've rediscovered where the Cookie Monster now resides, and that is in our Department of Human Resources here at Chelan PUD, because these cookies that appeared on our desk, did they come from the HR department this morning?
Yes, I lovingly baked those last night.
They are great.
They're delicious.
I just want you to know that.
You know, you're not eating.
Oh, I stole this one. Yeah, Cookie Monster, right? So thank you very much. And for those that are listening, these cookies are in honor of the eclipse because it shows the sun half covered with the moon. So it's we all got the inference. So thank you very much. All right. First item on our afternoon is the CIS update.
Sam Billy, provide you an update on what's going on with the customer information system.
Replacement. good afternoon, commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities, and with me I have Sam Dilley, who's in project management. And up to this point in time, he's been our project manager overseeing the process to date. So we're here today just to inform the board where we stand with this project. I believe it was last December that Sam was up here, and we were right at the cusp of starting to evaluate some proposals. So a few months have rolled by, and progress has continued to be made, and we want to just give you an update of where we stand. So it's strictly informational at this point. You know, the customer information system, it's a pretty large piece of software. It holds our customer data. It holds our rates. It calculates the bills. But it really is a foundational piece as we look forward around our customer experience. It's one that feeds a lot of other systems. You need a really robust, strong customer information system. We've enjoyed using the current one for, gosh, I think almost 14 years now. 13 years. So we've got our money's worth out of it, but it's at the end of its life. So we've been, continue to look ahead and see what's next. What's the next customer information system, and how will that help us through the customer experience, and how we seek to constantly improve that? You've seen this slide before, but this really kind of speaks to the core of the customer information system. That center right in the middle, that's the database itself, the piece of software. There's pieces around it, what we call a batch scheduler. That's really important with as sophisticated as we are and the number of processes that we have something that kind of manages the processes that we run on a daily basis. The other ones on the periphery, those are what we view as value added. Those are modules that, as we move forward, having a modern customer information system, at the right pace and sequence, we can add these that make sense. We've got a pretty nice footprint around a customer self-service with our e-billing, with our customer payments. But certainly there's improvements that are out there, and we would look to put the next generation of that in place. And having this foundational technology will help that. Mobile applications, as we look forward to advanced metering, having a meter data management system, mobile work management, other options that these current systems offer and how they interact with the customer information system. It's pretty critical. I thought I'd just give you a fairly high-level timeline of the activities that we've been working on. I know Sam has informed you in the past, but really last summer, late spring, we brought in a consultant to help us work through what we would call the requirements phase for those for the customer information system, as well as those future pieces of software. A core team was created, and I see several of them here in the room, and they've worked extremely hard over this last 18 months working to get to this point where we're at. But they were put in place. We developed a project charter and an initial timeline to start working towards. With that, after a pretty rigorous effort, that RFP, or that request for proposal, was put out. Through that process, you normally have clarification. The proposers, the vendor community, comes in with questions, so that was facilitated. And then the last time Sam was here, he brought forward that we were just ready to start evaluating these proposals. So we received 11. 9 of them made the cut, where we went through an evaluation process. Sam, I think you had a picture where each one of those proposals was a pretty... And the core team, they really spent a lot of time researching those. And I know there's a lot of long nights and weekends trying to get the best information and the best decision to move forward. So the first of the year, we took those 9, and then they were narrowed down to 4 customer information as well as 4 meter data management proposers that came in. And they came here on site, and they were able to demonstrate the functionality, be there for questions and answers, and just really thoroughly evaluate them. That led into even a further narrowing of that group down to what we were calling the final second interviews. So that really consumed most of the first quarter. We got through that process, and we decided to deliberately pause. And I'm a strong proponent of that, because these are really complicated systems. There's a lot at stake here. We really want to make sure we get it right. We had a great response to our request for proposal, but we still wanted to just ask ourselves, you know, is this the best that we have, and is there any other stones we need to turn over? We even looked at, you know, the current customer information system. What was our concern if we kept it still maintained in the environment for several more years? And came back that it's time to move forward. We need to replace that. But we also wanted to take a look at what other technologies are out there that we didn't hear from. So we just really scoured what was out there, and we learned some things. So the pause with this slide we'll go through is, you know, what did we learn? I think it's no surprise to us. We're a pretty unique utility. We've got a very large generation business unit. We have fisheries. We have parks. You know, even our customer utilities group is pretty broad and diverse with the amount of services we provide, as well as the broadband network on the wholesale side. But when you look at our customer base, we're a 50,000-meter utility. So that's, you know, that's small to medium size when you consider that. We saw through this effort that the vendor community really takes a look at how big you are, and that's, you know, they kind of differentiate themselves by that. We wanted to look and see, you know, if we looked at other solutions, how did they match up with us given our size? And we understood there were other solutions out there that cost less, but with that comes a trade-off, and that trade-off is we enjoy a very high level of integration and functionality with a lot of the tools we put in place over a number of years. We've developed really sophisticated financial systems. You see that through the quarterly reportings, the information that comes forward, the ability to turn around a lot of information and present it in a number of different ways. We have a very large work management system that, you know, supports our asset management strategies. Those are just a couple, as well as other control systems and other integrations. We rely on those, and we really evaluated just that whole footprint and what that looked like and what were other options. So really, at the end of the day, after doing this pause in this evaluation, we concluded that we want to remain among the best in these functions, and with that, we need to purchase a customer information system that supports that footprint as well. So again, I appreciate that pause. It did add more length to it. It really didn't push out our overall timeline, but it created more work for a lot of people, and hats off to them for, you know, thoroughly investigating that and working through it. So after going through where we're at, including the pause, we've gone back to the RFP that we have out there. We do have a final proposer, a top proposer, that we're still in that final interview stage. We hope to continue to move forward, and the next things to do would be to review system agreement terms and conditions, start narrowing in on the scope, schedule, budget, roles and responsibilities through this project. On the consent agenda right now is a resolution to fund Rose Minton, who works for Heights Consulting, and she does a nice job helping us be like that third-party quality assurance, quality control person who, as we move forward with the project, will give us kind of an independent view of how things are working. She will also be available for other ad hoc assignments as needed. One of the key things right now, and I'd like to point out, as we move into this implementation phase, we're looking at our project management structure. Sam's done a great job getting us to this point, but Sam is also starting to move into the facilities planning arena, which has a pretty large workload. So with that, we're transitioning to having Mark O'Brien take over the project management role of the CIS piece. I've worked with Mark for 20 years, and we've worked on similar type projects, and I think Mark will do a really nice job as we move into that phase with his background and his experience. The next piece, again, if we continue down the path with this top proposer, is to finalize contract terms, and then we would be back to the board later in the fall for an enabling resolution to then formally kick off the project. And everything goes as planned, we would anticipate having the project in implementation first of the year, quarter one. With that, I'd just like to open it up if there are any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Because I'd like to thank Sam for shepherding this for, what, a year and a half now?
Yeah, out there, yeah.
It's that's been a huge challenge. I know that we've been kept informed of the challenges that you face and the complexity of our utility. And he's taken on another one with facilities planning. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's promised to still keep his big toe in the water and help us out. So we're going to take him up on that.
Yeah.
And any other questions or comments from any member of the audience? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Strategic plan education initiatives update. Up comes the Cookie Monster.
I've been called worse.
Can't call you that, though, when a cookie in their mouth.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of the things we have been doing to achieve the objectives of the 2015 strategic plan. The economic development and reinvestment topic teams.
Lorna, for the record, maybe you want to put your name in.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Sorry, Lorna Klemanski, Human Resources and Safety. Okay, this totally messes up my timing.
Oh. Anyway.
Mike, can we restart the clock? Okay. We got a little side bet going. Not really. But anyway. The economic development and reinvestment topic teams identified development of education, mentoring skills, and skills development programs as options the district should pursue. We developed several initiatives to meet those interests. And we reported to the board on these initiatives last October, but so much has happened since then that we thought that it seemed time to provide you with an update on those accomplishments. I won't describe today everything the district does to educate the public and enhance the job readiness of the local workforce, but I will include some key initiatives, and I want to be really clear. These haven't all necessarily been part of the public power benefit program, but they address the objectives of the strategic plan. So we wanted to be able to quickly develop community relationships and make an impact within the two-year timeframe for this project. Creating and hiring for a position dedicated half-time to these initiatives seemed key to making that happen. And since being hired, Mario Cantu has developed relationships and assisted with education and job readiness initiatives, both internally and externally. Because one of the objectives of the strategic plan was economic development, we decided that the best way to get started would be to find out what skills other employers thought were lacking in the local workforce. We partnered with a subcommittee of our Valley Our Future and the HR Professional Association to survey local employers. We found that basic employability skills, such as being on time and communication skills, were even larger deficits than technical skills and direct job experience. These results were consistent with local and national, or with national and state published surveys. And based on the results of the survey, communicating to students and other potential workers about what it takes to be successful as an applicant or as an employee is part of our message in our outreach efforts. At the outset, we didn't have good direction about how to decide which efforts to pursue and which could be supported by our auditors. So we spent much of our time early on working with internal audit to develop a set of criteria and guidelines along with a process to follow to approve expenditures. One project the district halted several years ago was an electrical safety program for kindergarten through second graders. The Visitor Center has reestablished it for the coming year, and the North Central Educational Service District will conduct the program using materials provided by the PUD, possibly with public power benefit funding. These are photos of a few events the district has partnered with the college on. We've conducted tours and presentations for various students' groups. We want them to be excited and positive about the impact that we have on the community. We also want them to feel it's possible to get a job here, whatever their background might be, if they work hard, get the right training, and follow the requirements of our selection processes. So probably the most important legacy, though, is the startup of the four-year engineering technology program. Brett Bickford, Jim White, and Dan Garrison were instrumental in working with the college to get this program going. We've also partnered with the Wenatchee School District and Wenatchee Learns Connect on their Careers After School program. Visitor Center staff and district employees and Fleet Services and Fish and Wildlife hosted events that gave students the opportunity to learn more about the varied career opportunities available here at the district. We also provided input into the business input into the Apple STEM Network's development of objectives. Last fall, the Apple STEM Network accepted a grant to execute a locally developed business plan designed to help teachers and students benefit from project-based learning. That $111,000 grant was matched by $100,000 in local contributions to support STEM programs in school districts. Our input was part of what made the grant and the contributions possible. And that was pretty amazing considering that group formed just about 3 years ago. Representatives from several educational institutions and a number of key employers, including the Public Utility District, have been working hard to find ways for local educational institutions to bring more STEM learning experiences to our area students and to connect with the business community to make it all relevant. These are some of the Apple STEM events the district has supported and participated in. And Ruth Erwart was on the design and implementation team in 2016 for Pizza Pop and Power Tools, and the district has been a major sponsor of what is now an annual program that gives 8th grade girls in the Wenatchee School District an opportunity to explore non-traditional occupations including automotive, machining, welding, fire science, carpentry, heavy equipment, and of course, electric utilities. District employees participate on the date of the event. We set up two poles with one lineman on each pole to guide and instruct each of 300 girls, along with a spotter on the ground for each pole to allow the girls to safely test their abilities to climb a power pole and visualize themselves working in this occupation. For 2018, Ruth is working to bring this program to other local school districts such as Eniac, Cashmere, Leavenworth, and possibly Chelan or even Douglas. And you may recall, Doug Plinsky and his NACE made front page news in the Wenatchee World story about Pizza Pop and Power Tools back in 2016. There was also a nice story in the World in May of this year. And if you'd like to see the stories, I'd be happy to share those links with you. Ruth also hosts a program annually in November for recently separated veterans that matches current veteran job seekers with district veterans for job shadow opportunities, allowing them to see how skills they developed in the military can be valuable to the district and similar employers. She also regularly conducts programs and outreach to other groups, for especially for groups that are underrepresented in our workforce. Additional outreach events have included the Discover Us program. Ruth developed this program in 2015 to highlight district occupational opportunities and assist diverse candidates in particular to understand what is needed to be successful in our selection processes. Each year we've had sellout crowds. Mario Cantu attended in 2015, and as you know, he was hired in 2016. And Sergio Sanchez attended in 2016 and was hired as an energy resource conservation specialist in 2017. Ruth also conducts a number of sessions each year to provide career information to groups of students and potential workers who face particular challenges in finding employment. The Wenatchee High School, Wenatchee Valley College, and University Night is just one example of those programs and career fairs. And Mario Cantu reaches out to various groups of Hispanic and Latino students, including the ESL class at Wenatchee High School, to talk about potential careers with the district. He also partners with many of our programs and events to ensure they are accessible and relatable for Spanish speakers and those from the Hispanic Latino culture. The Northwest Mariachi Festival is actually part of a college scholarship program, also known as Pathways to College. You may not be aware that Wenatchee High School has three mariachi bands, and the program is credited with greatly increasing the graduation rate of Hispanic Latino students from Wenatchee High School. By the way, the U.S. Congress has invited Mariachi Wenatchee to perform for members of Congress at the Capitol the week of October 8th, which is quite an honor for them. In addition to being a sponsor and presenter at the Northwest Mariachi Festival, we were also a sponsor of the Mecha Regional Conference. Both of those events gave us the opportunity to present the district as an employer of choice, to encourage students to consider STEM learning and occupations, and to provide information about student internship opportunities. Speaking of student internship opportunities, these are a couple of groups of our recent summer interns. Each year, we provide several student internship opportunities. We have several student, we have been increasing the number of internships, giving the students educational work experience that we hope may encourage them to return to start their careers here. And in addition to providing several student internships each year, we offer job shadow opportunities, typically to high school students. Ruth works specifically with career counselors to align the student and their career interests with a PUD employee and job. Job shadows are typically in engineering, line work, natural resources, or general business. And these numbers do not include community tours of any kind, just actual job shadows that have been coordinated for an individual with a specific PUD employee. We also increase the amount of financial support we provide to current employees who are pursuing additional higher education. The last time the amount of the annual limit was renewed was more than 10 years ago, and the cost of college tuition, especially online and distance learning classes, increased dramatically since then. We hope this change will encourage more employees to enhance their educational credentials. Debbie Gallagher and Bob Bauer and the staff at Rocky Reach Visitor Center conduct a huge number of education and outreach programs every year. A program they developed in 2016 in partnership with the Foundation for Water and Energy Education was the STEM Academy for high school students. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. The STEM Academy inspired high school students again this summer with hands-on learning, and we hope some of these students will consider a career in hydropower. And year after year, staff of the Visitor Center capture the young hearts and minds of future workers and customer owners with their hugely successful River of Power program for fourth graders. Those are just two of many educational programs and events the Visitor Center conducts both on-site and off-site each year. This slide and the next include just some of the events at the Visitor Center each year. They host two Science Adventure Weeks, the Salmon Festival, Geocache Dam Challenges, the River Ramble, Fall Harvest Roundup, and lots and lots and lots of tours, 1,100 already conducted to date so far this year.
Wow.
They're amazing out there. So you should know that most, if not all, of these programs and initiatives are being continued on an ongoing basis. With that, we hope you will feel we are fulfilling the educational portions of the economic development and reinvestment objectives identified by the strategic plan. Thank you very much, and be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, questions? Amen.
Just happy.
Very
happy. Like what's going on.
Great.
Very impressive. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
It is so great to see that within the framework of what we're allowed to do, we can do this much for our local students. That's powerful.
So back to your HR hat, hiring Mario was a great decision. Thank you.
Yeah, it was. Thanks. All of this, we think, helps us build that pipeline of talent.
Yeah.
So that's our story, and we're sticking to it.
You bet. And don't worry, I will eat this second cookie.
Okay. Because I was starting to lose sleep over that.
All right. Commissioners, this morning we modified the consent agenda to include resolutions 9, 11, and 14. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda, including those resolutions?
And Mr. Chairman, so moved.
Is there a second? Been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as modified. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Now we're on to the regular agenda, resolution number 8.
Resolution ratifying field work orders number 1 through 7, authorizing final acceptance of work performed under bid number 15-55 with K&N Electric Motors Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington, and authorizing payment of retainage. Scott, that's you.
For the recording, I'm Scott Tidd. Good afternoon, commissioners. Steve, Teresa, Eric. I might need some help here, though. How do I get that?
Probably has it up for you.
Sorry about that.
We'll help you bring it up there, no problem. I'm supposed to do this ahead of time. Perfect.
Right there? Oh, I might need this for a pointer. Okay, once again, I'm Scott Tidd. I'm a project manager out at Rocky Reach Dam, and I'm working on four of the large Pride of the Chelan County PUD generating units out there, so C8 through C11. That's been my charge here for about 4 years now. So the reason we're here today, Steve already mentioned it to you regarding closing out one of the contracts. A little background, Voith had performed a holistic engineering study on the large units, and they basically were trying to figure out if any of the parts would not withstand adequate life. And one of those parts is the wicket gates. And so where this failure is, well, let me back up. The district, so essentially we found out that we had had some failures, and then we bid the work out. So we got two bids, and one of them was about half of the other. The work was awarded to K&N Industrial out of Spokane, and they did a very fine job on that. The work on the wicket gates went real well. All repairs were made within the drawing tolerances. But essentially, this is a drawing here. So there's the wicket gate. That's just the top of it. There's a top stem. You can see how large these things are. They're about 12,000 pounds apiece. Where the engineering failure was is at the stem to the end plate of the gate leaf. So we had found existing conditions that was a real sharp radius causing, you know, great stress concentrations. And so we had to repair that. So that was the primary part of the contract. But one of the other parts that's associated with this, you can see these lines up here at the top, that gets doweled to a lever. So you may know that with 20 wicket gates, 20 levers, two servo motors move all of these wicket gates at the same time and at the same rate and putting them at the same angle. The problem we had was at the lever themselves, and these slides are a little bit out of order, I apologize. This is where we were repairing the wicket gate. So this is in a shop with each of the wicket gates on a lathe, and we had to remove metal and put additional weld metal on it just to create a larger radius and get rid of that high stress concentration. Ran it through the fatigue analysis, and we wanted to make sure we were getting at least 30 years of additional life. So that's what that was about. Still staying with the wicket gates, I'll get back to the levers. The wicket gates themselves, you can see that actual conditions, we did some inspection and found machining, casting flaws. You can see that we were using a dye penetrant in here, and these bright red spots indicate deep pockets. So we had to fix that. Those were going to be things that, if they weren't repaired, could potentially cause a more catastrophic failure. I'm going to go to the levers here. So as far as the wicket gate levers are concerned, these are upside down, and they have a sleeve on them. So the shiny part is the stainless steel sleeve. These things upside down, you can see that how they associate with the wicket gates themselves. Those slots right there dowel into the wicket gates. So that's how the wicket gates are turned. This was an area that we learned a lot. We central maintenance actually measured some of these sleeves and found some to be undersized. So we embarked upon some replacements. In the course of replacing those, we had some ensuing problems. So after putting on new sleeves, we found that they weren't round. They actually had an egg shape. So over the course, you'll see, and you guys may have questions on the, we had four field work orders associated with these sleeves. So it started out to be a pretty simple process. At the end of the day, we replaced all of these sleeves, and we also machined them while they were on the lever. We had to get it into tolerance. We didn't really know how they were done before, and there was another problem down here where the drilled and tapped holes within the lever were not built per original drawing tolerances. So when you build a sleeve within tolerance and you put it on this lever, this existing piece of equipment, they didn't match up. So we we had some things to learn about there. One of the field work orders was the normal process out there is that these wicket gates, after being pulled from the unit, would just get taken out into the CM yard and just set on wood blocking. I know other projects around the country have gone to this kind of arrangement where they actually build stands to set the wicket gates in, and so it kind of protects our equipment a little bit better. This is the first of four units, and so going through this process, I think we've just about hit upon every little component, large and small, to where now the planning for the second, third, and fourth unit is is in place, and you'll see some of those packages come up for the second unit, Unit C9. Questions?
Questions, Commissioner?
How would you just take a minute and do your lessons learned on the project?
The lessons learned, again, this piece was not part of the holistic engineering study. So when we were alerted to a potential problem with these sleeves not being within drawing tolerance, we just attacked that. We thought this is going to be simple. Let's just make some replacement sleeves and let's put them on there and let's move forward. The lessons learned is that don't leave any stone unturned. So the granular lessons learned is that the scope of work for this component is going to say that we will take our existing levers and we will remove the sleeves. We will take measurements of the lever journal. We will take measurements of the drilled and tapped holes. And we will machine the lever sleeve, the sleeves while they've been mounted onto the... So really what we had learned is that the lever journal, so this part here, and how as it goes underneath the sleeve, was not round by either original manufacture or the last rehab. So that would have been late 90s, early 2000s. And we all are aware of some of the problems there. So we assumed that, well, we know that those were worked on then, that they were probably right. That was the mistake. That was the lessons learned is don't assume. And we have found and we think have corrected problems that perhaps were left us by the last rehab. This is one of them. So with that lever journal not being round, it doesn't matter if you put a nice round sleeve on it. It's going to conform. It's going to take that shape. And we didn't know that. We didn't think that, we didn't consider that as a problem. That helped, Steve?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Lure.
So, and then one of your things on the consent agenda, right, was that 16-148. So we hope to get started on the small units to do this same exact thing, but we're already ahead of the game.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Resolution number 10.
Resolution authorizing the general manager into a task authorization service agreement with Genesis Technology Solutions Incorporated of Ridgefield, Connecticut for generation asset management consulting services. Welcome, Janelle.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Hi.
I'm Janelle Ulrich, Generation Asset Program Manager. And today I wanted to talk with you a little bit about a proposal for us SATA, so service agreement with task authorization, for asset management consulting services with a company called Genesis Technology Solutions. So as you all know, we've been working very hard to evolve asset management within generation, distribution, and indeed district-wide with a much bigger emphasis starting about 2.5 years ago when I was hired into this position. we've come across two fairly significant challenges with generation asset management evolution, the first of which is cleaning up the basic work processes and the data in ways that support not only maintenance management, which is something we did really well for a very long time, but also for asset management purposes. And we need to do that at a really quick pace right now because, as per the previous presentation, we are changing out assets at a very high rate of pace in generation right now. And every time we make a change, we have to make sure that we're capturing all of the relevant information that's learned during that change. The information from the vendors, the information from the removal, the information from the install. Indeed, we want to make sure spare parts that come in with these incredibly large, expensive, complex pieces of equipment are captured in a meaningful way. They all feed towards good, sustainable, long-term asset management. The other challenge that happens to be happening at the exact same time, like a lovely, perfect storm, is keeping up with our employee retirement. We are rolling off some of our best talent in generation in the next couple years, and indeed have in the past 2 years, at a rate that's a bit alarming, which I'm sure many of you are fully aware of. My personal goal is to get as much information from them as possible before they leave. So doing that in a way that supports long-term asset management decisions, not just maintenance management. So the processes and the cleanup have to happen, and they have to happen quickly so that the new information and the old information can all be brought together to enhance our decision-making going forward. So this contract pretty much is here to allow us to supplement our existing staff. Right now in generation, there's two of us, to get over the hurdle of developing these processes and cleaning up this big volume of information during this kickoff of getting asset management more stabilized and during this roll-off of all of these employees and during all of the changeover of all this incredible equipment. We've set it up as an SATA with a lot of intention, recognizing that we've learned a lot of what we need as we go. It's some of these things are hard to see. You open something, I want to work on spare parts, and you realize, oh my goodness, there's like a whole trip chain of other things that need to be addressed. So we want to be very mindful and efficient, and we want to use money effectively. So each task that we propose will be carefully reviewed by the Generation and Transmission Portfolio Review Committee and budgeted, and the expenses will only be spent on the annual budget for which they were approved. We selected this contract. We found them to be, based on experience and what they bring to the table, to be the most qualified contractor for this type of work of those that we've evaluated, which are many. They are experts in enterprise asset management. So they work on all kinds of data, lots and lots of data cleanup. We use, most of you likely know, our computerized maintenance management systems called Maximo. And it can be used for asset management. Ours just wasn't set up to be used for asset management because, indeed, it was put into place in 1998, and a lot has changed since then. So they're experts on that subject. They're also experts on work management. They also have IT experts. They have a variety of different people that can supplement and, indeed, have supplemented our existing staff. In the past 2 years, we've been using them on a variety of small contracts to learn what they're capable of and to enter the water kind of with care, if you will. They've helped us with a variety of different things, including overall criticality ranking, helping us figure out what asset classes and populations do we want to work on first. Distribution and generation have tried that process, and the overall district-wide governance team has approved it, so that worked beautifully. They have created new manuals that help all planners everywhere in the district enter the data in appropriate ways and use best practices in our site, our tools as they exist with our customizations. They've gotten to know our people and our culture, and they've gotten to know some of our unique challenges. And the one project they've worked on that I think has brought us the most value and the only task that we're going to propose kicking off on right away is to help us with our, it's called a hierarchy. So inside the computer maintenance management system, you can say, I'm a generating unit, and the generating unit has a turbine, and the turbine has a wicket gate assembly. The interesting thing about the generating units is of the 31, 32 with the house unit, we had about five different hierarchies. So if you were to look at different units from different parts of a plant or different plants, they were different because they were built over time for maintenance. So when somebody needed to work on something, they would say, well, what asset is this and what's its parent and where should I build it, and then add their work order. Well, the way they did that on one end of the river ended up being significantly different than the other end of the river. This obviously doesn't, it supports maintenance management beautifully, which was their goal, but it doesn't support asset management. So we spent 2.5 years working with all the cross-functional teams and developing what does a standard generating unit need to look like for all of our units. Well, then as you can imagine, we have a lot in place. We have thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of records that we've collected, work log notes. We need to be able to find them. So we brought this consulting company in, and they built what they call map sheets. If you used to be called this asset, you're now going to be called this asset because we're going to call things the same. Upriver, downriver, everywhere. If this asset is sitting underneath this asset, it's going to be the same everywhere, so you're going to have to move it. And then we hired them to write programming language, went home over the 4th of July weekend, came back on Monday morning, and it was done. And so all of our generating units are all aligned the same way, and we're training all our foremen on that alignment so they can find their historical notes, they can find their future work. We need to finish that. That means spillways. We know how badly we need that for spillways, first and foremost, from our criticality rank. That means balance of plant. All those HVAC systems, the water systems, all the systems that run through our big powerhouses, they need to be standardized. All of our fishways. The fishways are very similar. Fish go up or they go down. We can find as many similarities as possible and make them all standardized. Civil structures. I went around and spoke with all of our hydro plant engineers and said, what keeps you up at night? And all of them said, the roofs. The roofs? Well, yeah, if the roofs leak, you're going to get water on your generating units. Now, none of our roofs are leaking right now, and we do pay attention to them. We don't have an asset built out for roofs on our powerhouses, so we will. We need help. So that's the intent of this contract. So basically, in a summary, it's to put in place, bring in some help we need, be able to trigger them using good governance and oversight as we go, and being mindful of efficient and effective use of our internal employees with additional help, and get the experience that we need to get through these hurdles for process development, data cleanup and collection, implementing best practices, and supporting the impending retirements and the large volume of asset turnover. Do you have any questions for me?
Wow. You love your job, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So that I'm just kind of, that's a lot of work. That's a ton of work. How many bodies? I mean, you know, some of it's done. You know, obviously they do some of it in their offices, wherever their offices are. Connecticut, is it? Or
yeah.
Is it? But how many bodies have you actually had out here working in our units?
Three. We had one individual who did all the hierarchy work. She was here from last October through the end of June. She ended right on time, right on schedule, right on budget.
Nonstop, yep. Every day working.
Yep, all time. And she's from Arizona, so she comes forth and back. She's been an incredible asset. And then we had two other individuals, one from Georgia and one from Houston, who've been flying in 2 weeks on, 1 week off, working with all of our planners and our engineers and our maintenance managers to figure out how to document how we want to do things across the district in an organized way. So it's been a flurry, but it's been fun. And we've also, there's a lot of credit needs to go to the plant engineers, to the planners, to the superintendents, to the Brett's engineers, because they've provided advice. They're our subject matter experts. The people who come in don't know anything about our generating units. So they've been there and they've participated, which I'm sure gives them long evenings and some weekends, but they've been there for us because they believe in this.
Yeah, I just wondered how long it would take them to get up to speed, but they've been working here for several years, so they're just accumulating knowledge as they go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and using a lot of the talent we have here with our technical library, Dan Kivett and Joe Herkenrath, they've documented a lot of pictures and things that help folks understand how the systems work. Most of the pictures you see come from them, so yeah.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
No. Nice.
I just have a comment for my fellow commissioners. Janelle is a reason She presented at a national conference and inspired some folks from Uganda to want to come visit our utility to talk about asset management. And she is, I can understand why you inspired them now. I really can.
Thank you.
That was a great presentation. And it's, you know, it's neat to see, you know, you excited about what you're doing. And it's a vital
enthusiasm.
Part. It's a vital part. You know, tracking what we do, asset management is huge. It really is. Thank you.
Resolution 12.
Resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into an agreement to purchase a 1.03 acre parcel of land in Chelan County and to enter into an agreement to reserve 5 MVA of distribution substation capacity exchange for the purchased land. Chad Rissman and Dan Frazier here. I think as I described earlier, we're planning to do a presentation because we did one at the last board meeting. So they're really here just to answer questions that you may have or if there was any public comment.
Question. Also, I'll let you know the Martin Davey is here representing Stemelt. He was an engineer that helped us this project. If you have any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Martin, for all the work that you did. He bridged the gap between Stemelt and Chelan PUD, understanding exactly property lines, grades, who was going to do what, estimating the values of various things that were being exchanged. So thank you, Martin.
So because it's a transaction, it's real estate, and there's a public view, Mr. President, I move that we accept Resolution 12 as presented.
On a standalone basis?
On a standalone basis.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
So moved and seconded to accept Resolution 12 as a real estate, since it is a real estate deal on a standalone basis. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Easiest it'll ever be, right?
I'm sorry?
I said this was the easiest one yet. Okay?
I like it.
Well, today anyway.
Okay. Resolution 13.
Resolution approving a new interlocal cooperative purchasing agreement, SA number 17-133, between the district and Energy Northwest for the purchase of materials, equipment, and supplies. Welcome, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Bruce Porter, Procurement Supervisor. This resolution is to authorize the district to enter into an interlocal cooperative purchasing agreement with Energy Northwest for the benefit of utilization of contracts for the purchase of goods and/or services as appropriate. Energy Northwest, the district, and the various Energy Northwest members have developed a joint procurement program for the purchase of materials, equipment, and supplies that are common to all of the participants. The premise is that by combining our usage on like items into one contract, that all the participants will realize the savings. Examples of items that we're talking about at the moment are power poles, transformers, switch gear, and conduit. These will all be bid out in the first year by Energy Northwest using the combined usage of all the participants. The initial joint procurement program will be run by Energy Northwest for a one-year term, and then an evaluation of the benefits will be performed to determine if it should continue for future years. If it continues for additional years, the members or the participants will take over the responsibility of rebidding out those different goods and/or services. So work will be evenly distributed amongst all the participants instead of just Energy Northwest doing all the work. There will be no fees or charges to the participants. All contracts will be competitively solicited and advertised nationally for a minimum of 30 days, and each solicitation will contain language that allows the contract to be used by the participants you might be interested in knowing who the participants are currently. The ones that have agreed to participate in this one-year program are Benton PUD, us, City of Richland, Clallam PUD, Clark PUD, Franklin, Grant, Grays Harbor, Klickitat, Mason Number 1, and Mason Number 3, and Skamania. The interlocal cooperative purchasing agreement has been reviewed by myself and legal, and as per Resolution 08-13325, the commission approval is required for the master purchasing agreement only. I recommend that the district enter into the interlocal cooperative purchasing agreement for the benefit for making Energy Northwest joint procurement program contracts available to the district. As always, PCS will continue to work with our internal customers to determine when use of cooperative purchasing agreements is in the district's best interest, taking into consideration convenience, price, and local suppliers. Any questions?
Well, I just had a question. I just don't remember. I thought we were a part of an interlocal cooperative purchasing agreement already, but maybe that was for other purchasing different kinds of items.
Yeah, so actually, Commissioner, I can take that. The district has many interlocal agreements.
Purchasing agreements?
Yeah, for cooperative purchasing. The statutes in Washington allow those kinds of arrangements, and the premise being, as Bruce correctly stated, that the volume of the purchasing power and potentially the competitive negotiating power would bring better pricing and be available to more than just a single party, since many of us have our own and similar procurement processes. But we have those agreements and use state contracts that are procured. Mm-hmm. We also have a lot of, I'm going to call them industry, maybe not electric, utility industry, but industry agreements that we have entered into at the board approval. That's probably why you're remembering them, because we are required to seek board approval for the first master. And then whether we access that particular agreement as an option, or we choose, and Bruce mentioned this, to go out and procure them independently on our own by separate bid, is often a decision that's made by the stakeholders with advice of PCS and legal and other reviewers, and depends upon things like pricing, supply, local vendors, timeliness for delivery, those kinds of things. So it's just another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, so it's probably the master agreement that I remember that we approved.
You are required as a board, and have been since 08, to approve all of those master agreements. That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Additional. Interesting to hear anyway, the details.
Additional questions or comments? You piqued my interest on one item you mentioned, and I hadn't even thought about it before you mentioned it. Energy Northwest will, in essence, be the facilitator for this first go-around, and assuming it works, they will step back, and then the group will take on its own role of doing the bidding. How does that, if you've got 50 or 75 items, does this utility take this set of items? How does that work?
Well, we haven't actually gotten to the point of discussing that as of yet in our group meetings, because we're just now trying to figure out the specifications for each of those different categories and how that will look when we put that together into a particular bid. But in participating in some in my previous life, before I came here to the district, when I worked for the state of Washington, it basically fit into everybody's workload and possibly your expertise for that particular commodity.
Okay.
And people would just volunteer to step up to say, I feel comfortable putting a bid together using everyone's information that would be for X, and someone else says Y, and you know, so
it truly is a cooperative effort.
It is a very cooperative effort.
I envision, Commissioner, bucketing them similarly to we do now, right? We every year go out for a bid for conduit, a bid for transformers, a bid for different pieces of equipment or items that we procure. And really, it's almost by a need and vendor. You know, are you going to hit the right vendor or manufacturer to supply the same bucket of things?
But if you've got 10, 15 utilities
involved. That's actually something that Bruce made, and I was hoping he'd make it here when he started talking about this idea, and he kind of scuffed the surface of it there. But I think they're finding that while we all purchase the same type of stuff, we all have slightly different requirements and technical specifications and are similar, not the same. And so that's one of the struggles that there's been a lot of time and effort putting into, is capturing a scope for a particular item or product that's sufficient to bring a bid or a proposal that would be a realistic option for all of those different participating utilities. And that's part of what they'll be evaluating at the end of the first year and contemplated actually by the agreement.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Anything else?
Any other questions from anybody? Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's see, that was 13. Resolution number 15.
Resolution ratifying field work order number 1, authorizing final acceptance of work performed under bid number 17-66 with K&N Electric Motors Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington, and authorizing payment of retainage. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm John Sigerser. I'm the engineering manager down at Rock Island. This is a resolution ratifying field work order number 1 and authorizing final acceptance for work performed under contract 1766 with K&N Electric Motors of Spokane Valley. On June 19th, the Commission approved a resolution ratifying and confirming a declaration of an emergency and authorizing the general manager to take steps necessary to repair the Rock Island Spillway gantry crane hoist motors. These are the main hoist motors on the P&H gantry crane on the spillway down at Rock Island. District staff prepared a contract, specifications, and a work scope to repair the field poles of those motors, and a contract for the value of $31,072.50 was executed with K&N on June 22nd. So after disassembly, though, it was determined that not only the field poles were damaged, but also the interpole windings were also damaged on those motors. So field work order 1 was executed to repair those windings. This added 8 days to the contract. It also added $14,322 to the contract. So the final contract was $45,394.50. And the total duration was 3.5 weeks. It's important to note that the estimated contract value was $60,000. That was included in the resolution presented on June 19th. So we have two lessons learned as a result of this contract. The first one, we actually had data on these motors showing that the health of these motors was declining, but it was contained in the notes of the maximum work orders that the wiremen use when they do their annual testing on those motors. This kind of shows some of the importance of the processes that Janelle was talking about, mm-hmm. and asset management and preventive maintenance, making sure that we not only do we get the data, but we got to put it somewhere where we can trend and track it. And so those processes that Janelle will help develop are going to be very important. The second lesson learned that we had was we analyzed 3 different procurement methods to get this work done. One of them being an emergency declaration through the board. And through the process of declaring an emergency, we saved approximately 4 weeks of time in getting those motors out, repaired, returned back into service, showing that declaring an emergency is a valid procurement method and was very helpful, especially this time because we were in the high flow season. So, as you know, at Rock Island, we need those cranes in order to lift up the spill gates. So if we had an excursion, a sudden increase in flow for whatever reason, those cranes were necessary to do that. So we saved some valuable time by doing that. Any questions?
Questions? questions from anybody in the audience? Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, if I've recorded correctly, we need to take action on resolutions number 8, 10, 13, and 15 before us.
That's correct.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolutions 10.
8, 10.
8, 10, 13, and 15.
You guys made it complicated today.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve resolutions 8, 10, 13, and 15. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Manager item.
Just have one. I want to invite Suzanne Hartman up to describe. She recently represented us at the Chelan City Council to talk about the automated metering infrastructure initiative.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Suzanne Hartman, Manager of Communications. This is just an update, really, since the June 5th meeting where Andy Wendell presented to you where we were on the AMI and got the direction to move forward on an RFP looking for, with a request for proposal, looking for vendors, potential vendors for the advanced metering infrastructure system. And with that, not long after that, we did a customer newsletter where we had a whole feature article on AMI and what it was and what it means to the district and to our customer owners. And then mid to late July, we received a request from the mayor of Chelan asking if the PUD would come up and talk to the city council and update them, give them a briefing on advanced metering and where we were. And apparently that came out of a request from some citizens up in the Chelan area who were looking to perhaps have the council, the city council, invoke an ordinance that would ban smart meters, as they're referring to them, or the advanced meters in the city of Chelan. And so the mayor wanted to make sure that the council was fully briefed on what the PUD was doing and then heard the concerns of the citizens. And so I went up on August 8th to the regular city council meeting, and I spoke on behalf of the PUD discussing where we were in the process, that we were entering into an RFP to make sure that we could identify a vendor or vendors that could address not only the questions we might have, but questions that our customers have, and to look at some of the features that we were interested in, which included the opt-out and opt-up potential. And I presented that information, and then there were probably about seven citizens who got up and spoke about their opposition to smart meters. And at that time, they asked the council for a potential ordinance to then ban the meters in Chelan. I'll just inform you that I did not hear anything new during the presentations that you haven't already heard from those who have come forward to us, not only in our meetings, but also via email or letters to us. And the council seemed to have, their primary questions were around privacy and security of information. And then also a question from Councilmember Dobbs about the opt-up proposal. And the discussion was quite good. And some of the community members asked me some more specific questions about AMI. And at the end of the meeting, the council did not take any action on an ordinance. And the mayor made it fairly clear that this is a PUD matter and a PUD program, and that his experience is that Chelan PUD and its commissioners and its staff are more than open, willing, and interested in hearing from customers, and that he was assured that, in fact, his feeling was that we would continue to do so, and appreciated the fact that we came and talked to the council. And so at this point, that's how it was left. There's been a couple of articles, one in Go Lake Chelan and one in the Lake Chelan Mirror. And just kind of as an aside, after our newsletter, we probably received a handful, maybe a dozen, either emails or letters, and they were pretty evenly divided between those who wanted to know when can we get those meters and those who, again, opposed those meters. But that is pretty much the conversation.
Questions? Comments? Start down there, Ann, and then Steve.
I was not at the meeting. I was out of town, but I read a couple different articles. I read the Go Lake Chelan article and a couple articles, and it sounded to me like you did a really good job, Suzanne, representing the PUD. And I just want to publicly thank Mike Cooney for offering what I think was a really fair and balanced venue or opportunity for people to speak out and share their thoughts. And I appreciate the fact that he invited the PUD to come and offer what we, you know, our view of what we're going to be providing. So I think it sounds like it was a good meeting and important. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. I had those same feelings that Ann shared. And just to add, the article in the paper, I thought, was so well done, and your questions and responses were so good that it became, for me, kind of a go-to source of information to continue to add in, you know, answer questions as people ask them. I thought it was excellent.
Great. And,
I think you guys had three different articles in their paper that we can...
Good.
I thought it was excellent.
Good.
All three articles.
Additional questions or comments?
When are we going to be discussing? I guess Andy's not in here, is he? Maybe I'll ask Andy. When we'll have our next public discussion of this issue, smart meters? John, maybe John knows. I get phone calls and inquiries.
Mm-hmm. We're still working through that process. Candidly, the customer information system, a lot of the resources who will be called upon to work on the RFP for the AMI have been really focused on that. And as we kind of settle out our project management going forward, we anticipate putting a schedule together to see what that looks like and when it would be, an opportunity to come forward and have that discussion. But in the immediate near future, we don't really anticipate anything unless, of course, you had more questions you wanted or other information you'd like us to look into.
Let me just check, John. I think our original schedule was the RFP would be coming back to the board late this calendar year or something.
That's something we need to work on, that schedule, just, you know, in conjunction with the state of the customer information system.
Right. Probably won't be sooner than that.
Right, correct.
So. If we continue to have people come forward and ask questions and share concerns and Leavenworth apparently is beginning to form a group, and so if they would like the PUD to come and present, we're more than willing, happy to do that.
And we've
so they should contact
that.
You or Andy or right. John.
Yes,
yes,
we've offered that on several Good. Occasions. And just so you're aware, we do have a landing page on our website, Advanced Meters, chelanpud.org/advancedmeters. And we have kept track of all of the communications that we have received and some of our responses to those. And so we offer that as a forum, too, for people.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions? One that emerged in my mind, recognizing that the city of Seattle is currently going through this process, have we been tracking what type of feedback they've been getting?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have. We've been following that. It's obviously a much larger utility, more customers, but very similar kind of tracking in terms of the questions that have been raised in the conversation. So, so we've been following it closely.
But they're scheduled to be done within a year?
I think within the past month, they really started their full implementation of the meters. And it'll probably, around a year, it'll probably take them, if not 18 months, to do their installs.
How many advanced meters? I know all of our water meters were changed out, weren't they, to become advanced meters?
Back in 2006, we replaced all our manual meters to that one way where it just sends out a signal, you drive by and pick it up. That was back in 2006.
So how many of those are we presently, are we using now?
We have about 6,000. All our water meters are that technology, and we're right around 6,000 meters. So they've been out there. On the electric side, we call them ERT meters, and they're the one-way meters, and they really have been in, they've been utilized in the industry since, I think, the 70s. Mm-hmm. Puget Sound Energy back in the 80s went totally one-way meters. We have always been using them since about the 80s, and a lot of them were there for really tough-to-access issues, or if you had challenges with dogs, things of that nature. So we've had quite a bit of experience. Back in 2005, when we went to monthly meter reading, we changed the standard to go to a one-way meter for any new meter that we put out in the field.
In 2005?
2005, yes.
Yes. And so how many of those?
Those
did
we
you
have
call them ERT meters?
Yeah.
ERT.
Yeah, ERT meters. And I apologize. It's electronic responding something right. Transmitter.
Just so I can remember.
And we're up to about 16,000 of those meters.
The electric.
Right.
On our residential electric side, which you know, is a significant portion. You may recall back after we took over the electric system from the city of Kashmir, we really wanted to go through and re-meter that system just so we had a good understanding of what was out there. So that was one where it was about 1,200 meters, I believe. We replaced the city of Kashmir's analog electromechanical meters with these one-way digital ERT meters.
So if somebody's analog meter breaks down, doesn't function anymore, they're automatically replaced with this ERT meter.
Correct.
And these are the one-way advanced meters are sending out a signal pretty much continuously.
Yeah, they do a bubble up. They just send it out. And again, usually what happens, we drive by and we pick up that read, or they can still access it from a handheld, from a distance.
So just so I can be really clear, so the new two-way meters will only pulse four times a day and for a total time of approximately 2 minutes, so there'll be much less electromagnetic radiation.
Correct.
Or radio frequency.
Transmitting.
Transmitted.
Yes.
Much less.
Yes.
And did I read that? And I've looked at the chart, but I thought the numbers in the newspaper were interesting. It's 100,000 times less RF than a cell phone. Is that what I read?
Yeah. And we have that informational bulletin that has that information in it as well.
Yeah, that was well done. Did I interrupt you? Sorry.
No.
Yeah, I thought the informational bulletin was well done.
I interrupted you.
So if I heard these comments correctly, on 16,000 of our current meters, the change we're talking about will reduce by magnitude the EMF.
The RF.
Correct. Yeah, I think the one ways are just, they don't know when the truck will drive by or to pick it up. So it's just, I think they could be 4 seconds, it could be 8 seconds that it just sends out, here's my read.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And the analog meters are going out of production, right?
Yeah. Okay. Additional questions?
That kind of changes the
good update.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you.
That's it for manager items today.
Manager items are done. Commission items. Any commission items?
I was going to copy off this letter for you and give it to you at lunchtime, and I didn't do it. But I received a really nice letter from a constituent, a friend in Chelan, and may I just read just very brief sections of it?
Sure.
For the record?
Sure.
All right. Go to, you know what, Mr. President, go ahead and check with the others while I bring it up, while I find it.
Okay.
I'll have it here quickly.
Any other items? Commission items? might just comment that I was at, I mentioned at our last meeting that I was going to go to the town hall meeting with Senator Cantwell, and I did manage to do that and was able to share with the senator and the audience our gratitude for the work she's been doing on behalf of public power and specifically as it relates to Chelan PUD. So it was a well-attended meeting and a good event.
Okay, I'm ready. As we continue to work toward replacing two other commissioners on another board, I've had occasion to reflect on the quality of services we receive from various public entities in the area. And I want you to know that in my opinion, the PUD is at the top. We have so many great things because of the PUD: fiber, incredible parks, trails, cheap electric power at the very least. Additionally, customer service through the PUD is always top-notch. It is one of the few public entities that I can call and consistently get a hold of a real human being that actually answers my questions. My feelings were reinforced the other day. She talked about a letter that she received from the PUD saying that they were unable to access the meter because the gate was locked and they needed to know the combination and could they provide that. When I called to give this information, the person that answered told me that meter readers had... Anyway, she went on to describe the process. It gave me confidence to know that the PUD is doing what is needed so they can respond appropriately when a fire emergency occurs. At any rate, I want you to know that you should be proud to serve on the PUD board. Obviously, it is doing a great job in carrying out its job. Signed, Leah Thompson.
Nice.
Cool. Very nice. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. There's no other commission items. Do you have a follow-up on delegation?
We do. So we had a couple. One was the rates history information, which I think was developed and might have stuck on my desk while I was out for a bit. So hopefully it was sent out this morning.
Oh, I hadn't seen it before this morning.
So I just discovered this morning that it had gotten stuck. And so you should be able to find it when you return to your email sometime.
I'm going to use that sometime. It got stuck on my desk.
the second one is comments that Commissioner England made that Commissioner McKenna was asking about. And I know that Mike Coleman is reaching out to Commissioner England just to make sure that we have good communication between us on that one. So we'll be getting back to you on that.
Which question was that?
This is on the 5G. He was commenting in one of the, I think it was Go Lake Chelan, on 5G issues.
Okay. All right. Is there anything from today?
I do not have anything from today. Did I miss anything?
I think so. Is there any additional public comment? Since I don't see any public here, I don't think there probably is. Any other matters to come before the commission? Do we have Eric?
I don't.
I'm thinking about if we set the date for our board workshop.
I know
we have set that.
So okay. We haven't set it by motion, however, because
we have
some tentative dates and times held, I knew.
We have one meeting before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, we are in need of set. We had a September 19th.
Yeah, so we have one additional meeting. If you know the time, location, and all of that information, we could certainly do it now.
Well, I think
we don't.
Yeah. And I saw that. I saw that email reminded me.
And I apologize. It's not. It is on my placeholder list of things to do. It's just simply been, I've seen it come on and off and change enough that I haven't put it on to do. If we're sufficiently,
I think everybody had indicated an ability to be there, and so it be good to set it and we get it on everybody's calendar permit.
That would be fine. All we would need is a motion setting a special meeting for purpose of a workshop on the date time, so CTC August 20
September 19th.
September 19th, yeah.
To start at 9 a.m.
4 p.m.
I believe that's right.
Yeah. Yep.
September 14th.
19th.
And we only need the commencement time. We don't need the end time.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Set a special meeting for a workshop on 9/19 to commence at 9 a.m. at the CTC.
Second. I didn't want that to die because of a lack of a second.
That's a Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes,
it is.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday, meeting. Yeah. Okay, so motion has been made and seconded to set a place and a time for a special meeting for a board workshop of September 19th at 9 a.m. at the CTC. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. All right.
I realize that puts us all together for 2 days in a row.
Actually, and some of us for more than that. I'm going to go to the water workshop, Ann.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, well, now that I'm a state officer, I just thought I'd...
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Get that grin off your face.
Yep. Hey, I enjoyed it when I did it.
Yeah. So if there's no other business to come before us, we'll stand adjourned.